right. Well, I feel innovated. How about you, Ryan?
You know, that was just like throwing us in the deep end of the pool to City Park, wasn't it, right there?
It really was. Well, hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to Drive Through HR. I am your guest host for the day, Crystal Miller, and I'm here with Ryan Mead, founder and president of Vitru, Inc. Ryan, could you say hello to everyone?
Hello, everybody.
Awesome. I'm sure they heard you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sounds good. Sounds good. Crystal, probably new to the HR spectrum as far as, you know, getting out into the world. I, in 2011, founded a company called Vitru. We've been in the marketplace now since then. We can talk about that later, but my background is really unique. I graduated college and started in banking. Personally, and so I was in banking and did a lot of hiring and recruiting within the financial industries business. Then went into the large agriculture in agriculture and did that same thing in for many organizations within agriculture. But throughout that entire process, Crystal, and I've been reading your blog, getting up to date here since I had the opportunity to know you'd be the guest today. And what's interesting is regardless of where you're working or what your skill set is, people really want to enjoy what they do, and they need to fit in that environment. So that was really our worthy problem and our cause when we created Vitru in the end of 2011.
Got it. Okay, so I have to ask, banking to agriculture, that's not a move I would have expected.
That's not – you know, it was funny. Growing up, those of you that are listening, we're based in Omaha, Nebraska. So Nebraska, probably like Dallas, you know, Texas is a strong ag state, and it's really interesting the ties between finance. I was an ag banker and a business banker, and got tied into agriculture and leading a recruiting department and an HR department for a large ag.
Nice. Okay. That's,
so they probably recruited me more for my ability to learn than they did, hey, you have your PhD or you can do X. So.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. Very cool. All right, so then what led you from that to starting a company?
No, Crystal, honestly, we've been asked that so many times. And without sounding corny, because I hear this all the time, is everybody thinks something's broken. We thought our big guiding purpose was the way that individuals and businesses, the way that they connected was broken. The idea of, you know, creating a resume, putting that online, working that through an applicant tracking system to maybe meet someone was just somewhere we lost the humanness in it, the humanity. So we created early in 2011 and 2012 the ability for individuals to create a portfolio, use some psychometrics that we had developed over the way in our research, to match individuals with companies in the world. So, in essence, a dual-sided marketplace, Crystal.
Okay. Well, that's fair, since, you know, whether we like to admit it or not as employers, there is that recognition that candidates can say no, and
yeah,
I guess sometimes do say no.
Well, and vice versa, what we were seeing is we were seeing organizations have a really good understanding of what their culture was or what made a candidate fit well there, but they couldn't articulate it well enough, or that there wasn't a process when people applied that they could determine that.
How does Vitru solve that? Help me. No,
yeah,
I'm
so,
jumping in.
No, so early on, what we did is we have a Big Five personality assessment, as well as we created a work values assessment that allows organizations to have their employees build Vitru profiles, and then that would come in as an aggregate, and basically individuals would be matched to that. But here's the pivot. Everybody that is in the tech world or HR seems like that's the buzzword, right? Pivot.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the market. We were blessed with customers that trusted us early on, and they started integrating what we built into their organization. And what we would do when we build relationships and hear them, they kept saying, I don't really care about this matching idea. What I really care about is this little nugget in here, this thing that we call the team builder, that allowed organizations to take a pulse of all their employees and then bring them together in unique ways. So organizations could say, hey, I have a crane operators. I only have 25 of them. I wonder what makes them unique. They'd associate those together and say, wow, okay, that's a unique subculture within our organization. I didn't know that. Or they would say, man, I really wonder why these 27 people here are performing better than these 14. Well, then they'd use our science, they'd drag these people together, and they'd find association. So so what we did is we went back to the drawing board in 2013, early in 2013. We just kept doing more research and research and research. And coming out in January, you will see an entirely new Vitru. Because nobody needs more science in the workplace. We hate to admit that, don't we? So nobody, I mean, we've done a lot of science. We've done a lot of research. What Vitru has done is...
I'm interrupting your pitch here, but no pitch at all.
Throw a red flag up or a white flag, and this would be a great discussion for us.
Let's throw that flag.
The problem that we saw is that do you use Dropbox?
It's full. Actually, I have three Dropbox accounts. They're all full.
We do too here. So here's the thing. The cool part about Drew Houston when he was at MIT and when he started creating Dropbox, that wasn't the first cloud-based system. He wasn't the first one to come up with the idea of storage in the cloud, et cetera. What Drew and his team did is their ability to say, let's make cloud storage so easy to use that it's just, why wouldn't you use it? What we've done at Vitru is we've made industrial science so easy to use that every individual within the organization can now use it. The idea of you taking an assessment or building a profile, putting it in a three-ring binder, setting it on the back of your desk, that's so 1980 Michael J. Fox. It's not even applicable in our world anymore. So what Vitru does is it allows you to say, I can hop on my laptop, I can hop on my iPad, my iPhone, and go, hey, how do I compare to this employee that I'm working next to? Or, hey, maybe I'm a contingent workforce. Maybe I'm going to be doing some work for this organization for the next 5 weeks. I'd like to know how I match up with the team that I'm put on quick. That's what Vitru can quickly do.
So, okay. I think that's fascinating. But I'm going to throw a little monkey wrench in this and help me out here. Because this feels a little bit like... feels a little bit like a dating site where you go in and you fill a profile out and you say, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other, right? And maybe you do it through quizzes. Yep. Maybe you just self-identify. But a lot of that is based off of where you're, like the headspace that you have that day. It may or may not really be reflective of who you are. So how do you account for that?
You know, that's a great question. And most industrial psychologists in the world today that we've done business with and we've interviewed is, there's two reasons. Obviously, ours is not just, hey, what kind of Disney character are you? How do you self-identify? Boy, I knew I was, you know, because we see those all the time on Facebook, don't we, Crystal? You're like, oh, my gosh. That
and it's like crack. You can't help but do it.
It's, you know, and so ours is actually great science. So two industrial psychologists that we had retained built our tools, and so they're both predictable and reliable and validated. But to your point, hey, do I change? Where is my mind today? That is a great question, and we're studying that right now, is to say, maybe I got married. Maybe I got a divorce. Maybe I had a child. Maybe I had a death. Maybe I had a bad date. Goes back to your blog. I totally read that one, Crystal.
Well, I mean, just like seriously, who we are day to day, there are subtle changes. They're not massive changes, but they're subtle changes. And if you walk into work, I think it was actually Jason Seiden that said this at the first HR conference I ever went to. He was talking about professionalism, right, which is his buzzword.
Yeah.
But what he was saying was interesting in the fact that you have a bad day, whatever it is that happened at you outside of the office, you bring that into work with you, and it affects everything you do. So every assessment you take, every quiz you take, every personality, whatever, you're seeing it through the filter of what's going on around you right then.
You do capture. It is a snapshot. It is a capture of what you are at the time. What we are studying right now, and it's what my cat out of the bag is, is really we're not tied to an application process. So you're not answering questions. You're not being part of this idea to say, hey, I hope I answer like most people in that organization or what that job description looks like. When you build a Vitreo profile, the idea is that you want to be transparent because that transparency leads to a happy workplace. But we are studying that to say, how often should you take these, and what are those subtle nuances? Are we able to radar blip those, to your point? So that's an awesome question, Crystal.
Well, thank you. I'd like to think that I can pull those out once in a while,
but it is
something that fascinates me, right? I mean, we take all of these, and down to any kind of assessment. I had to take an assessment recently with a company that it just killed me, mainly because I love statistics and I hate math. I don't understand. I get it. I totally understand how that's not normal or in harmony with each other, but that's the reality, right? So I don't get having to – what it boils down to is I don't get having to take those assessments because I don't see how it helps me in my day-to-day job if I know how to do, you know, the things that are required of a stockbroker. I'm not a stockbroker. So that kind of leads into the same question of, from an employee standpoint, yeah, we want a happy workforce, but to some extent, does that feel like almost a buzz concept? Like, let's forget buzzword and get a buzz concept.
I mean, I'm going to throw kudos out to you on your post recently, and I did just read it today, about the hashtag for the young kid at Target.
Thanks.
You know what I mean? About that. Is so what I think organizations can't quite get a grip of yet is why do people do what they do? Why do I come? So keep in mind, if I'm an HR manager, I'm a hiring manager at Target, I'm fulfilled being a hiring manager there.
You're assuming something that's probably not true.
Exactly. We superimpose all of that. So now keep in mind, I was in agriculture. I recruited in agriculture. I grew up in and around livestock my whole life. There is a point, though, where I don't want to go and be on a feedlot every day of my life. That doesn't fulfill me. Now, if I would superimpose my beliefs and go, why do you want to do that? Why do you want to be up 24 hours a day, you know, be on call 365? I don't get that. What Vitreo allows and what science has yet to do is just be able to go, you know what, I am who I am, and it makes me happy being that. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I think there's a premise issue, right? And
okay.
It's something that I'm grappling with right now, so let's talk through this together. Do we incorrectly assume that people are fulfilled in what they do? Because you started out with the statement of, if I'm a manager at Target, a line manager, I'm fulfilled doing that. We're making a fundamental assumption that people are fulfilled in their jobs, when the reality is, I think there's a good percentage of the workforce that probably is not. That is what we have to do. We go to school or we don't go to school, but whenever we finish whatever level of education we're going to do, we enter the workforce because we're not independently wealthy. You have to work. But are we fulfilled?
Research, and I'll throw it out to Gout, research shows us overwhelmingly no.
Okay, so if we're not fulfilled.
Yeah, I can put that serious hat on.
Okay, so if we're not fulfilled, I'm trying to figure out how to say it. If we're not fulfilled, do we really start with culture or do we start with the meaning of work? And if we start with the meaning of work and trying to help people find fulfillment in what they do, will that lead to a better culture?
Yes. But to your point about what is available in the world today, and this isn't a pitch for Vitreo, this is just a pitch of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the science and most of that key learning is not available to everyone throughout the organization.
What if it's as, and now maybe I am oversimplifying this, I'll say that. What if a decent place to start, though, is with just helping people understand the impact of their job? So I was talking with a janitor in 2010-ish, somewhere in there. But sitting in office, I'm the last person in the office. I was every day. The janitor comes in, taking out the trash. And I was just like, man, your job doesn't seem fun. And he said, it's not about fun. It's about important. If I wasn't here for a week, no one would work.
Right.
He got the meaning of the quirk. He fundamentally understood it. But do we help employees do that?
Yes. And yes, I'm like standing up at my desk. Yes. Because here's the cool part, is that's ultimately the work values. That's truly why you value the work you do. Now, are there other individuals within that current role that may not be fulfilled, that may not like being a janitor? To your point, right? So he says, it's not what I like to do, but this is why I feel it, a sense of duty, right? So if you would really take a good pulse and understanding, that individual goes to work on it because of that duty, right? And it might be because, Crystal, they want work-life balance. Maybe they know that they go to work because if they don't, they won't have the capacity to as you said, make money.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, we got to do it. Everybody's going to bring home the bacon. But when you talk about work value, so at that point, the meaning of your work is the value that it brings to others. So I guess what I'm saying is, if we're looking at culture and we're looking at self-identifying, maybe we shouldn't be looking at self-identifying. Maybe we should be having our team members identify us?
Correct. That's exactly. You're totally right. You're absolutely 100% right. What we've done as an organization and across the world is we've created this culture and these mission statements that this is who we are, and now let's attract people to look like it. What we need to do is look out and go, gosh, these are the people that are really, really good at it. Why do they do what they do? And then start going, that's our culture. That's who we need to attract more people like, because we've talked about this for years. Who's your best recruiter within your organization? People that are fulfilled, right? That talk about your company out there. So if we can start understanding, holy cow, that's what a greeter at Walmart looks like. And we always laugh about that, right? Who would want to be a greeter at Walmart? Those that are really good at it really want to do it. And they want to do it for various reasons. You know, here's a great example. We have a client that's in the steel industry. I knew nothing about the steel industry before. Nothing, right? But in order to be very good at that industry, it's a commoditized business. You just sell it at a rate, I mark it up, and that goes on. But
yeah.
I interviewed 4 or 5 banders. So their job is to go into the warehouse, collect inventory, band it together, and put it on a truck and get it out the door, right? These have been individuals within this organization for a long time. And so I asked them, I said, guys, what do you do? And you know what they said? It was just amazing. They said, we're the last line before it reaches the customer. They didn't call themselves banders. They didn't call themselves pickers. They didn't call them in. They said, we're the last line to actually put it together, put this package together, and have it delivered to that company that bought this steel from us, because when they open that steel door or they open that container, that's what they see. They don't see their salesman. They don't see their invoice. They don't see anything. They just see this package. So when they started recruiting people based on those individuals, they said, okay, we need people that have an attention to detail, that love, that understand they're in the customer service business. Before, that was just an entry-level position, right? Am I making any sense, Crystal?
Yeah, absolutely.
So without understanding the work values, why those individuals banded steel, we just thought, well, they banded steel because it was an entry-level position. So I'm
that's pretty fascinating. And it's interesting. We don't often equate that into our hiring processes or strategies. Sorry. It's probably all over our process. It's just not really integrated at all. Culture is the warm, fuzzy thing that we market. As opposed to,
because we could never tangibly do it, right? Here's another example of a client of ours that I learned. We had a client, Northwestern Mutual. They're in the life insurance business, right? You know, you'd think, man, they call on me all the time. They're hawking their goods. They're selling. Those guys have to be driven by what? Money, right? You'd think money and rewards, et cetera. Well, when we started building out their successful individuals within the organization, none of them were driven by money. They were driven by having a clear path to success, by opportunity, by work-life balance. They knew if they did the things hard every day while they were there, they'd be successful. What wasn't successful in their organization is people that were extremely creative, extremely innovative.
Really?
Yeah, because here's the thing. That's a business that's been around for a long time, and they had if they say if you make 20 calls a day, those 20 calls will lead into five meetings. Those five meetings will lead to this. So if somebody came in and it was really entrepreneurial and really creative and say, I don't really want to make those 20 calls, I'm going to do this, they totally went against that culture, you see?
It's funny, recruiting's kind of the same way, it turns out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I don't...
That's interesting. So you helped solve for that. We need to do a quick reset. I've been a little remiss because I've been so caught up in this conversation. So if you are just now joining us, you are listening to Drive Through HR and Ryan Mead, the founder and president of Vitru, which is a really interesting culture product, among other things, and I'll let you talk about that in a second, is joining us, and he has experience and sharing his experience with us. So to that end, I did kind of like jump the track a little bit with what you're with everything that Vitru
can
do. So let's talk about that. How does Vitru fit into the process? Like, walk me through that.
No, that's and I don't want this to be a Vitru commercial, so I
no, but I'd love to understand it.
Here's the key point that maybe the big takeaway is that if you have an organization that puts learning as central to your organization, it pays huge dividends. But as the world sets today, if you said earlier in our conversation, I had to take this assessment, and I'm not even in Crystal,
what was it that
you said? Yeah, I'm not even in stockbroking. Why did I need to take this, right? But think about that process. It was something done to you, wasn't it? Like, I can remember when we first introduced Vitru to the world, they'd say, yeah, HR managers would be like, I'm going to have my people go through this. I'm going to put them through this. And I'm like, holy crap, did you just hear what you said? You're saying I'm going to put them through this. That's what we do. Like, I
take
my horses
to a train. Do they get a
survival t-shirt? Yeah, like a teacher. I'm going to put them through this. And if they get through, man, they're going to take their picture covered in mud and, you know, the warrior dash type thing.
For sure. I got bronchitis from that. That was a very scary thing. But I get your point.
You did that?
I did. And I ended up with bronchitis and my friend got pneumonia. But it was a very interesting experience. And, yes, I would say a lot of our recruitment process probably feels similar to candidates. Okay.
Exactly. So what we've done is we've said, okay, first of all, let's just have everybody in the organization build a Vitru profile. With Vitru now, you can use a totally free product for an organization of whatever size to say, I'm going to compare myself to somebody. So, Crystal, if you and I built a Vitru profile and we started doing that, I can do it for any organization. If I'm a recruiter, I could recruit on behalf of any organization that I want to, build a candidate pool for people, and then I compare them to individuals they're going to go work with. Okay, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And go, wow, this is where they agree or disagree. And it's more than just the idea of an assessment tool. Early on, I was telling you that in 2011, 2012, we interviewed assessment providers in the world because we thought we'd partner with some of them. And what was fascinating is one of the larger ones that we met with was in healthcare, very strongly in healthcare. So they could tell you what great nurses look like, great doctors, et cetera. It's part of the application process. I'm just telling everybody in the HR world what we already know, but We built these assessments so that they could be bolted on to the application process. Individuals would be put through, like mashed potatoes through a grinder, right? Put through this process, and then after they were done taking the assessment, they got a beautiful little note that said, thank you. Your application will be processed. They never were able to see, well, what did I just spend the last 20 minutes doing? What do my results look like? How do I fit with that organization? Am I glad I'm getting the job or am I not glad I'm getting the job? And that works really, really good if I have an entire body of people that I can study, right? Nurses. But, Crystal, as you were saying, think about the workforce now in the next 20 years. There's going to be so many different jobs, so many different organizations, some contingent, some work out of their home, some work, et cetera. How do we study those people?
That's a good question. And what kind of impact do they have on a culture? And okay, so here's the question we were batting around last week. Do you still have a culture if it's virtual?
Absolutely. If you have two, you and I have a culture right here, Crystal. We start doing work together. The way that we do work has culture. And that's such a buzz term. You know what I mean? It's like saying, do you have a happy marriage?
Yeah.
And misunderstood. Yeah. Do you have a happy marriage? Well, we have a successful marriage. We're still married. You know, maybe it's successful, maybe it's not.
Sometimes you're just on the slow march towards death. Let's be real.
Yeah, exactly. The warrior march, as we go back to, right? Yeah. The thing is if you try to define what your culture is to your employees, it's like trying to put M&Ms, spilled M&Ms back in the bag. You can't do it. Ultimately, what you have is you have a bag of M&Ms, and what you pick up is what your culture is. So your culture is what's on the streets every day talking at the Target. You know, that Target, they filled a bucket of a kid at Target, that Alex kid that you wrote about, and they filled his bucket. I'd be putting an IV in that Alex kid and go, dude, why do you like doing this?
Totally. But so here, okay, and that would be fabulous from a marketing perspective. But now I'm going to ask you a different question in the three-ish minutes that we have left. Do employees really care about the culture? I know that they do fundamentally on some level, they do. So, like, we'll just say that. But here's why I'm asking. I was talking to a group of engineers, computer engineers at an aviation company, and we were talking about culture. And I was like, so tell me about your culture. And, you know, like, how does that impact you and this and the other? And they're like, you know, we don't care. We come to work. That's our thing. Like, the culture is the HR thing.
Mm-hmm.
And no one had really ever voiced that, but to some degree, that kind of makes sense. They don't think about their culture, they live it. And if they don't like it, they leave. So, I mean, yes, it matters, but how much do they care about the way the culture is described? What does that really mean? Do people pay attention to that in jobs?
They pay attention to it by the way that I'm trying to think of the best answer for this. My whole team knows I paint analogies all the time, and they're usually stupid ones. But your turnover is a direct reflection of how well people believe in your culture. So those individuals in the aviation and the engineering, that's a culture. They have a culture. You know what their culture is? Is that I don't give a crap. Their culture is that I really care about my job. This stuff around me isn't that important. So. It's harder with larger organizations. You know, when you get into thousands and thousands of employees, you have subcultures. You have a culture of one location. You have a culture of a division. You know, we have clients, and Chris, you can probably say this, within an organization, the accounting department can't get along with the HR department, right?
Yeah.
There's two different cultures. So for you to go to, your question is, do people really care about it? They care with their feet. They'll either stay or they'll leave.
Right. Well, and
well,
I think that's fair. I think they care
about
it. I don't think they care about the terms, and I think defining it takes away from, like, for some employees, the process of defining it, they don't understand that value, that immediate value to them. So it's something that they're having to do that takes away from their job. So how can employers and HR professionals that are working through culture projects, how can they help lessen that?
That's a great. First of all, it's not a process, and it's not a project. In other words, you can't just say 2015 is going to be our culture year. Culture happens every day, 24/7, 365, and it's a moving target. So you either are hiring, promoting, developing, helping individuals learn in your organization, or you aren't. I'm a Nebraska Cornhusker. Okay, born and bred. I know it's terrible. I'm going to throw that out there. Tom Osborne was a coach that we all looked up to. And Tom Osborne said, when you go to play for him, he'd say two things. Either you're going to get better or you're going to get worse, but you never stay the same. And really, culture's that way.
I think that's excellent advice. I also think that's where we need to have to stop the conversation, because people need to know how to find you and how to find Vitru if they agree with the stuff that you're talking about and they want to learn more. Where can they go?
Well, and I will tell you, we are totally a team. If you don't agree with us, gosh, talk to us. I mean, we're all about learning. And so we're launching our new platform. Get in line. We have limited seats for the new platform. GoVitru.com. GoVitru.com.
That's great. All right, guys, we got to go. Thank you so much for being with us, Ryan. And you can find him at Ryan Vitru on the Twitters. Have a great day, guys.
Crystal, you're awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, have a great day. Bye, everybody.